The CNBC app. Global market news in one place. Customizable sections and personalized alerts. Stocks tracking, interactive charts and market insights all in your hands. Stay connected. Stay informed. Download the CNBC app today.
A warm welcome to this Friday edition of Squawkbox. These are your headlines. Asian equity markets selling off and US futures plunging as the WHO calls on an emergency meeting over a new COVID variant discovered in southern Africa. And the EU renews vaccination calls. Well, crude prices also heading deep into the red on renewed demand concerns and fears of a rising surplus in the first quarter, whilst the UK puts six southern African countries back on the red list. We're going to hear from the Bundesbank's Claudia Buch, who tells us that while German households expect prices to climb, Germany's central bank sees price pressures easing despite future uncertainty.
Inflation rates will decline. The question is to what level and how persistent will this be? And I think what monetary policy has to do is to be prepared for all future contingencies and to act accordingly.
Plus, you've got French fishermen threatening to blockade the Channel Tunnel and the port of Calais today in protest at UK fishing licenses. Right, let's get into our top story. The World Health Organization has called a special meeting today to discuss a new COVID variant found in southern Africa. The health agency says the new strain has a number of mutations and has so far only been detected in small numbers. The WHO says it is monitoring the impact it could have on vaccines and treatments. The United Kingdom has announced it will ban flights from six African countries, including South Africa, as a response to the new virus strain. Now, the health secretary, Sajid Javid, said the precautions were brought in to prevent the new variant from hindering the recovery.
The early indications we have of this variant is that it may be more transmissible than the Delta variant, and the vaccines that we currently have may be less effective against it. Now, to be clear, we have not detected any of this new variant in the UK at this point in time, but we've always been clear that we will take action to protect the progress that we have made.
Right, so a lot of concern, obviously, about this southern African variant. Let's have a look at the Asian indices and where they are currently trading. We've seen a sell-off on some of the major bourses. What I can show you is that the Nikkei is currently trading down 2.5%. The Shenzhen trading just around the flat line, actually, as indeed the Shanghai Composite down 0.51%. The Hang Seng down 2.2%. Let's take a look at Asian travel stocks, travel-related stocks as well. Let's have a look at Cathay Pacific down 3.8%. Japan Airlines taking a really big decline, down 6.5%. Singapore Airlines currently trading down 2.7%. So clearly the airline sector taking this one on the chin as well. We'll move on to US futures, which, as I mentioned in the headlines, are currently trading significantly lower. So we've got the Dow losing 431 points. We've got the Nasdaq down 65 live prices. There, again, it's very illiquid. You've got to remember, at the best of times, this early on, there will not be a huge liquidity in the US futures market, and especially coming off a bank holiday as well, the Thanksgiving holiday. And not a lot of traders were due to be at their desk today, whether they come into their desk because of concerns about the volatility created by this southern African variant of coronavirus remains to be seen. But it's a half session for equity trading in the United States, and even that is normally very, very limited in its trading volumes as well. But whether this will augur more activity from traders remains to be seen. The opening calls for the European indices. Well, we are called 125 points lower on the FTSE 100. The CAC 40 is called by a similar margin. The Xetra DAX futures, 269 points. And the FTSE MIB losing solidly around about 2% on the opening calls. We've been debating about this oil move all week, haven't we? And funnily enough, the deputy head of news and I were just having a big debate about whether this was a big move, given what we've seen. And I'll go with her on this one, because we've got a 3% decline, look at this, on WTI. Although, I will hasten to add that the moves this week, which is kind of about there, really, the moves this week are in a range, because we had the sell-off originally when people talked about this big SPR or OECD release of volumes. Then when it actually came about and people dug into the weeds on it, the market rallied quite aggressively with Brent back over $82 a barrel. Now we're back down to 80 bucks. So we are solidly within range of the last 7 days. So when I talk to you about these big moves to the downside, and they are big moves, there's no doubt about it, a 3% move is a big move. The fact of the matter is they are within the range that we've seen as of late. So we're not just making new ground on a couple of week basis. All right. It's important you know that as well. Let's have a look at what the dollar is doing as well. Now, we've seen the dollar in its ascendancy over the last few days, trading pretty much where it was, actually. We've still got the euro dollar knocking on the door of 112 to the downside. Cable is 133, dollar yen 114, and dollar yuan 6.4. I will say, though, what I have noticed, and we haven't got it in the wall here, is that the treasury price as well, we were up to what? After that really great weekly jobless claims data, we're up to about 164 on the yield on the 10-year, 1.64. We're back down below 160 now as well. People, as you would expect, going into safe havens, and Treasuries fits the bill on that occasion. Right, France is tightening its COVID restrictions, making masks compulsory. It's toughening health pass screenings and offering booster shots to all residents over 18 as it, like all nations, combat a potential fifth wave of the pandemic. Now, despite sharply rising infections, officials say a nationwide lockdown is not on the cards. So Charlotte joins us now. Charlotte, very nice to see you this morning. Where does France sit compared to other nations? We saw some quite startling footage of empty streets in Bratislava yesterday. Austria, we know, has gone into a strenuous lockdown. Why does France, why does the president, why does the prime minister feel in France at the moment we're not going to re-enter a lockdown?
That was the initial message from Olivier Véran, the health minister, who held that conference yesterday, saying he looked, trying to reassure straight away the population that was awaiting this press conference. He hadn't held a press conference for a long time. And he said, look, I'm not here to announce you any closures, any curfews or any limit to travel. So they're trying to be reassuring on that side. And like what we've seen in other European countries, they say at the moment, we have a weapon, we have the vaccine, and they're really trying to roll out this booster campaign. And they're accelerating it very fast. For the moment, up until yesterday, it was only the over 65s that were offered a booster jab. We had some recommendations from health authorities saying that the over 40 should get it. And then the government announced that it's actually everybody over 18-year-old that will be eligible for a booster 5 months after the second injection. So that will start from Saturday. From today, they can book already online for their appointment to get that vaccine. So from December 15th, all the over 65 will need to have their booster jab to keep their health pass. Remember that in France, you have the health pass that shows a vaccination status or a recent negative test. And if they don't have the jab by December 15th, they will lose that for the over 65. For everybody else, it will be the 15th of January or 7 months after the second jab. They will need to have the third injection or they will lose the health pass. Again, as you said, they're bringing back masks indoor. They'll be mandatory in all those areas where the health pass was in place. You could take off your mask, for example, in theatres. Now it's cancelled again. From today, you will have to wear your mask everywhere indoors. In some outdoor spaces as well, it will be possible, depending on the local authority if they decided. But the minister yesterday said that in Christmas markets, for example, where they expect a lot of people gathering even if it's outdoor space, the mask will be mandatory as well. Finally, in a final push to get people that still not vaccinated in front, you have to pay for the lateral flow test. Again, in your health pass, you can show a recent negative test. People have to pay for it, 25 euros per lateral flow test. test. Up until now, it was every 72 hours you had to do a pass, and now it will be every 24 hours you will have to have a negative test. So it'll be €25 per day, essentially, for the ones that don't have full vaccination status. So again, final push from the government to get all those final people not vaccinated to get those vaccines in place. So again, the final thing that we heard yesterday from the health minister, that there will be some increased border controls. It didn't give some details just yet. It will be, the details will be given in the next 24 to 48 hours. That was before we had the news from that new variant of concern that has emerged later yesterday evening. So we don't have any details on that front yet from the French government on whether they will put some limits on the specific travel from South Africa. But they will say that they will put some more restrictions and more controls at the borders in any case in the next couple of days. Steve.
Very much indeed for that. We will move on from France to the broader EU as well, because the European Medicines Agency has cleared the Pfizer-BioNTech coronavirus vaccine for use in children aged 5 to 11 years old. The jabs could be administered to millions of school children as infections continue to spike across the continent. The rollout is expected to begin in January. The EU is considering setting a nine-month expiration date on its COVID-19 certificates. A number of European countries are reimposing, as we've just heard, restrictions as they face an uptick in cases, putting a further strain on travel inside the bloc. Well, Sylvia joins us with more on this. Sylvia, nice to see you this morning.
Good morning, Steve. So indeed, on Thursday, the European Commission announced that indeed the digital certificate that people have been using in the EU to travel will have a nine-month expiration date from the first set of vaccines. So if you're in the European Union and you would like to travel to another member state, starting in January, you will have to check whether your digital certificate is still valid to travel across the bloc. Now, it's important to bear in mind that the proposal that the Commission presented on Thursday does not include booster shots. So, in essence, the Commission is still expected in the coming weeks to say a validation and expiration date for booster shots, but that didn't come with this proposal. Another measure that the Commission announced on Thursday is that children below the age of 6 should be free from any travel restrictions. It's important to bear in mind that we're talking about the proposal at this stage, so the member states will still have to discuss it and then decide how they will be implementing it. But that is the opinion from the European Commission at this point. And of course, there's a big focus in this proposal on the vaccinated. But of course, for many European countries, the problem is the unvaccinated, is the rate of the population that has simply not got a first shot of COVID-19 vaccines yet. And in this regard, the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen, she said on Thursday that people that have not received the COVID-19 vaccine yet should do so.
Vaccination against COVID-19 saves thousands of lives in the European Union. But a new wave is hitting us, and we need to step up vaccination further. The good news is that we have enough vaccine doses. By the end of this week, Europe will have delivered 1 billion doses to our member states. And another important news is that you should take your booster shot 6 months after the original vaccination.
So just to give you an idea, Steve, the average of any inoculation rate across the EU is at about 68% at this point. But that masks differences across the bloc, where you see, for instance, in Portugal, the inoculation rate is at about 90%. But then you look at countries such as Austria, where only about 65% of the population has received the COVID-19 vaccine. So let's see how this will unfold.
Yeah, that is startling, isn't it, the difference in the two. Thank you very much indeed for that report. I'll see you a little bit later on, of course, Sylvia. Thank you very much. Coming up on the show, the Bundesbank's Claudia Buch weighs in on Germany's new government in waiting, as well as climate and the inflation debate. We will bring you Karen's interview with the German Central Bank Vice President coming up next.
Listen to CNBC's Beyond the Valley, the podcast that explores the biggest tech news from across the globe. Join me, Arjun Karpal.
And me, Tom Chitty, every week as we bring you insights into the top stories, unpack the latest trends, and find out where the industry is headed.
Now available on Spotify, Apple Music, and Google Podcasts.
All right, let's take a look at these Asian equity markets and where they are currently trading as well. So the Nikkei, as you can see, taking it on the chin there, down 750 points. That's 2.5%, as you can see. The broader topics is down a couple of percent. The Chinese mainland market actually performing much better, although coming off a little bit more than they were down earlier on. Shanghai Composite down 0.5%. The Hang Seng down over 2% as well. I can tell you one or two others as well. Down in Jakarta, they're down 1.4%. The Kospi out of Seoul down 1.45%. The Taiex down by a similar margin. We'll keep an eye on these. We'll keep an eye on those US futures and, of course, the update to the European markets as we build up to that. Right. Germany's Bundesbank says lenders should prepare to boost their capital buffers once again, given the return to economic growth following the onset of the pandemic. The buffer, which is currently at 0%, could be lifted to its above pre-pandemic point, given the high credit levels. Now, the Bundesbank also warned lenders could be exposed to an overheating property market. Well, isn't that fascinating? You've got the Bundesbank talking about an overheating property market, and yet you've got the Riksbank telling us yesterday. Do you remember what I said with Karen yesterday? 0.0% right to the end of 2023. And yet the Swedish property market, for instance, it's only up 20% so far this year. Oh, to be a central banker. Right, well, Karen caught up, actually, with the vice president of the Bundesbank, that's Claudia Buch, and asked where she stood on the pressures facing central banks to hike rates and whether she thought such a move would be helpful in easing risks posed by excess liquidity.
Pretty clear that the more gradual an increase in interest rates is, the easier it is for the financial sector to deal with it. So any abrupt change in interest rates would expose vulnerabilities in the banks, in the insurance sector, and also in the fund sector. But let me emphasize that an abrupt increase in interest rates is not purely we're not looking here at a monetary policy shock, but it can come from the markets. So in that sense, we're looking generally at how exposed is the financial sector to interest rate risks, and we're seeing that abrupt changes in interest rates do have an impact on the financial system. This is what I mentioned earlier, why we need sufficient buffers in the system across all the institutions to deal with it. But this is not a statement about specific monetary policy actions being taken.
What about small tweaks, though, to monetary policy? Because also on the radar is whether the ECB has to move quicker than what was anticipated, maybe with a small tweak to monetary policy later on next year in about 12 months' time. Doesn't that address some of the concerns that you have about financial stability when you're talking about capital buffers? Surely the blunt instrument of a move on the deposit rate would do the trick for you.
Yeah, so I mean, again, this is a decision that the ECB and the Governing Council has to take. I think what's our role here is that we make sure that the financial sector is sufficiently robust to deal with any future shock that may happen, and to also all financial institutions to make sure that they take precautionary measures to deal with future interest rate risk, macro risks, and that is, I mean, the financial stability implications of any measures are obviously also taken into consideration by central bank when they take their decisions. But here our role is to really make sure that we have a stable and resilient financial system that can deal with these future contingencies.
Claudia, as we talk about a stable central bank as well, Jens Weidmann vacates the top job at the Bundesbank later this year. Your name has been touted as a potential replacement. Are you still in the running?
Well, you would certainly understand that I can't comment on that. I think it's in the very good hands of our government.
We were witnessing at this point predictions by Weidmann that you will see inflation peak above 6%, then barely fall to 3% by the end of next year. Are you concerned about this elevated position for pricing pressures in Germany?
Yeah, I mean, this is, I mean, first of all, what one has to say is that with all the different opinions and statements about inflation, so there's one common denominator of all our forecasts, that the increase in inflation that we're currently seeing is going to be temporary. So this is what all the forecasts are saying. I think the differences are in terms of interpretation and also policy needs. The differences are with regard to the elevated upside risks that I see and that we see for inflation going forward. So the inflation rates will decline. The question is to what level and how persistent will this be. And I think what monetary policy has to do is to be prepared for all future contingencies and to act accordingly. And again, what we can do to support monetary policy when it comes to these decisions is to make sure that also there's the financial system is able to deal with policy changes.
Well, there's some really, really interesting stuff. So I'm grateful to Karen for that as well. Let's get to Annetta. She is with us, it says on my prompt. So Annetta, Isabel Schnabel, Joachim Nagel, Markus Brunemeyer, Jakob von Weizsäcker, your cookies. The list is long. Claudia Buch on there as well somewhere. What's the short list look like? Good morning to you.
Good morning to you as well. I think the short list looks like Isabel Schnabel and Joachim Nagel. That's at least what I've been hearing from my sources. Jörg Kukies is said to be the next economic advisor to the chancellor, so he might move into the chancellery. And the others, well, it could be, but the most likely, because you have to look at the party books they are having. So Joachim Nagel is an SPD man, so that probably gives him a higher likelihood to enter the Bundesbank at the top. Isabel Schnabel, of course, is a woman, and she would also be a preferred candidate. In a way, it depends on also the kind of ideology you want to have in the Bundesbank. Isabel Schnabel would probably be great to explain Germans why the ECB is doing what they do and not opposing it too much in what they are doing. Joachim Nagel has a long tradition inside the Bundesbank, currently at the Bank of International Settlement, but he's also said to be a bit more pro-ECB than or pro-modern monetary policy setting than others, like, for example, Volker Wieland. So the race is wide open. I think Berlin is first preoccupied with their ministerial posts, with the Greens also having problems to fill the ministers, and there's a growing rift inside the party. So I think it will still take a bit of time until we know who's the next Weidmann at the top of the Bundesbank.
There's a very interesting part in the report which looks into the effect of climate policies on the financial system. And what we're doing is basically an exercise, a scenario exercise, asking, well, what happens if CO2 prices increase in line with the Paris Agreement? What would be the valuation changes for the financial system? And one of the good news that we have is that, of course, we would see valuation changes, so assets would lose in value, but it's a relatively small change, so it's less in the single digit for the banks, for the insurers, and also for the investment fund sector. So what that is basically saying, that if we have good climate policies, that's also good for financial stability, and if we take the right actions now, that also mitigates future risks. So again, prevention is a very important buzzword here.
So Claudia Buch, which we have been just seeing, is set to leave, at least what I'm hearing, because she is at the Bundesbank, backed by the CDU, and of course the CDU is no longer part of the next government. So you see, there's a lot of moving parts in the equation, but I guess the Bundesbank itself will not change tremendously when it comes to their policy approach, even though we have a more modern and perhaps ECB embracing a Bundesbank president as the next one.
Thank you for listening to Squawk Box Europe Express.
For more market-moving news, you can head to CNBC.com.
Or join us again on the show with Jeff Cutmore, Steve Sedgwick and Karen Cho, weekdays on CNBC.